Hey, Lights, Camera, Barstool listeners, you can find us every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want to come and join with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 77 of season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Gooch, Chris Castellani coming at you with a very end of January, early February type slate of reviews today and an interview.
Oh, yeah.
With Alan Cumming. That is right, the legend himself, Alan Cumming, who has a new reality show on Peacock, which is awesome, by the way, if you like reality TV, but a man of many, many talents and high fashion.
And a great last name.
Yes, yeah, Trobon's first response when I told him we were interviewing him, he called him Alan Refractory, and I thought that was very funny. That could be a term he could bring into the future for Alan Cumming.
For those who are watching on YouTube, which is a great place to watch, by the way, I am recording from Scottsdale, Arizona, and I am what can be only described as the most mainstream movie room I've ever seen.
I see a Star Wars behind you. Right, so we on got, the center.
Behind me, I got
Jeff, Back to the Future.
Jeff, you got to talk straight into the mic, because when you turned away, it sounded like you were yelling from like the bottom of a ditch, like Will Ferrell and Austin Powers.
This says movie theater behind me, this little sign.
I love that.
There's some fake metal film reels. Behind my computer, there's more fake metal film reels.
Projector.
Yeah, a projector. It says cinema. And if you thought not enough signs to say cinema, hold on a second. I don't want to spoil a couple of the posters. Another sign says cinema. Cars poster. Frozen. And Toy Story is a Disney shill in this place, because there's
this
also
is a
Indiana
man of
Jones
true
right here.
Taste,
too.
Impeccable taste. This guy
big
has
time Disney house. Shills. Yeah,
you're staying at Bob Iger's Arizona house.
Yes. Fucking hot leather couches in the back too. I love that.
Yeah, perfect couch for Arizona. We have 80.
There's a dartboard with Bob Chapek's face on it.
Yeah.
We have 80 for Brady and Knock at the Cabin, which could be called Knock on the Cabin, and I don't think I know. We are going to talk. Did anyone read what the book was about? Did anyone read the difference?
No.
I'm going to bring that up a little bit, because I'm actually curious what you guys think, if you guys don't know how the book ends compared to the movie, because there are differences.
Yeah, Gooch alluded to it before we started recording. I'm interested to find out.
M. Night told the writer that he was changing it, and the writer – so the book is apparently very divisive among fans, and there's a lot of people who don't like the ending of the book at all. And I guess he called the writer, and the writer told him, like, yeah, that was my second ending, which sounds like complete horseshit.
I like that. No, I dig that out, because that's going to be the George R. R. Martin eventually.
Yeah.
When he's like, your guys' ending was actually my worst, least ending. I had nothing planned like that, and then I'll have this new one.
So, yeah, we'll be reviewing those two, interview with Alan Cumming. This episode brought to you by...
All right, let's talk about Allbirds. When it comes to quality, Mother Nature knows best. And you can take that idea and run with the Wool Runners from Allbirds. This year, trade your synthetic footwear for Wool Runners crafted with premium supernatural. These are ghost materials that are comfy and durable. So you can run to the ends of the earth or to the store, whatever you need. Wool Runners are built using premium supernatural minerals and with low environmental impact. You get next level comfort with ZQ certified superfine merino wood that's temperature regulating, moisture wicking, and itch free. Sugarcane based sweet foam. Damn, that sounds like something you put on top of coffee too. Everything about this is just sounds incredible already. Midsoles contour to your feet, and they put a little bounce into your step. Castor bean insoles are cushiony and naturally odor reducing. They're machine washable, so you can look fresh as the first day you got them. Designed to be more versatile and stylish, because your feet deserve better than becoming billboards for brands. We talk about Allbirds all the time. I think the coolest thing about them, honestly, they are super comfortable, obviously, but being able to wash them when they get messed up is such a relief, and not really having to worry too much about how you wash them. Like, I got them messed up in disgusting dog water in New York City fucking rainwater or whatever, threw them in the wash, let them air dry, good as new. They might have different washing instructions, so make sure you read the tags or whatever. Anyway, this year, take a big step forward for Mother Nature and all with the Allbirds Wool Runner. Discover your perfect pair at allbirds.com today. That's allbirds.com.
Some news. You guys talked on Friday about the DC stuff. We don't have to rehash that, but I got to mention, since the last episode of this podcast, it came out, a big report came out that apparently James Gunn upset the Warner Brothers executives with his recent DC comments, which is just honestly like, what gives you the right to be mad? Like what? Like, I don't. Okay, like maybe you're upset with how he handled it a little bit, but I feel like he's been fairly, at least on the public side of things, fairly professional. But when you suck that much ass at making movies and ruining your universe, do you really have the right to be upset with the guy you brought in to fix everything? Like, I think that's a little ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Not only the guy you brought in to fix anything, but the guy that made the best movie in your entire catalog. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's a pretty tough scene for them.
Like, that's tough to be upset with that guy.
It's like the Bengals drafting Joe Burrow and being like, who the fuck is this guy? Who does he think he is?
Yeah.
I'm going to read the comments. It says, speaking to journalists at the private DC Slate reveal event, Gunn criticized DC's past as pretty messed up, giving away IP like they were party favors, putting hundreds of millions of dollars into a film where a screenplay is only two-thirds of the way done. Ooh. Like, imagine being offended by that. Like, fuck him for saying that about us, by the way. Like, I don't know. That's kind of on you. Like, that's like kind of your problem.
You hired him to come in and make sure that you guys do the exact opposite of what he's talking about. So, like, I feel like if you're offended by it, you're almost defending those actions as correct.
It's as simple as like hiring a cleaning person. The cleaning person's like, oh, you're going to get this? It's a little dirty here. And you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
What are you trying to imply here?
Yeah, what the fuck? So that's really the only like big DC news since then. I don't think we're going to get too much in the immediate future, except there's another Flash trailer coming out for the Super Bowl, which actually I kind of want to pull up the Super Bowl trailers
list we talked about. Shockingly large. Like, has to be more movies than I can ever remember. Movies and like TV trailers than I can ever remember. Because usually it's like products and brands like doing shit.
Yeah, there's Breaking like Bad, Doritos meme or whatever.
Boy, that's – I love Breaking Bad, but – Time to put
the last nail in the coffin on that. I get it. It's really cool seeing Bryan Cranston and fucking Aaron Paul together. I get it. I'm done with it.
Have they not been in the Super Bowl for like 5 consecutive years?
Feels like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bryan Cranston's one of those actors who's in everything. So
they do the tequila stuff. They do all that other stuff together. It's cool. We get it. I'm ready to move on.
I did love their little tequila tour they went on, where they're just like bartending and giving out shots to people getting absolute hammered at bars. That was fun.
I would argue Aaron Paul is the one in charge of these, because, like, let's be honest, his career after Breaking Bad is
El Camino and Westworld.
Need for Speed. Yeah, that's pretty sick.
Fuck, man, not good.
Yeah. So here's what they're saying is there's going to be. This is via Deadline. The ones they don't know: Indiana Jones, Dial of Destiny. I'm not quite used to saying that yet. The Marvels, Creed 3, which almost feels like why, because it's about to come out. John Wick Chapter 4.
I'm going to Creed on Thursday, the IMAX screening of it. That's going to be fun as shit.
Wait, that's it? Cannot go.
That's it? I could have sworn I saw a list with like 15 things.
No, those are the ones they don't know.
Oh,
buddy, I haven't read the ones they've confirmed. Here we go.
Hit him. Hit us.
Fast 10, which, by the way, have you been wondering if you'd be excited for Fast 10? Oh, really? Gooch, you are?
Kind of.
The nostalgia trailers did nothing for me.
What's the reasoning behind excitement for Fast 10?
Because they went to space last time. Like, what is left?
Yeah, that's
what
are the they max.
You think it's the max, and then they do. We could have time travel.
That was
time
my theory. Still on the table. Like, time travel. Yeah.
God, this is part one of a part two, right? If I remember right.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so, it's not even the end.
Yeah. If they do time travel, I'm all the way in.
That's what I'm saying.
That I would be so far bought in on, like, if they do time travel, like, that would just rule.
They're not above. those writers are not above doing anything.
Which one is it where The Rock grabbed a torpedo in the middle of an iceberg and just like flipped it around? I forget which one that, like, was they do everything. State? I think there was like an icy place. That's all I remember. But well, yeah, they're where they are. They'll do anything.
There's one where he breaks out of his cast.
Yes.
Yeah, that one rocked. That was cool. And Hobbs and Shaw, I'm still on Hobbs and Shaw if they make a second one of those.
So like Fast that 10, that'll be huge. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, another trailer. Very excited for that. Mm-hmm. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, though at this point, that's just kind of, hey, this is coming out like ASAP.
Yeah.
The Flash, that's the one getting a lot of hype. They're calling The Flash one of the greatest superhero movies ever made.
This shit better be good, man.
Which, like,
it's weird. I think the weirdest part about it, right, is because if we, with DC, like, we're all just shitting on DC and everything, too. It's just like, what we know for The Flash is not great. It's like just a sideline character in the DCEU movies, which weren't good. And then, like, we have like this full flip of that to being the best comic book movie ever made. I feel like I can't raise my expectations to the point where I would be disappointed because the bar for DC is so low. Yeah. And this is a pre-James Gunn pick. So, like, it's very tough. But at the same time, they're hyping up so much. And this hype train's been rolling for like 6 months. I can't figure it out. Can't figure this shit out.
It's kind of funny because, like, we've all talked about it. It said there are so many legal think about how quickly studios will drop somebody who's canceled or has an issue unless they are massive, and Ezra Miller is not by any means he's not moving billions for the company. Maybe he will if the movie's good. Like, he has caused countless headaches of weird, like, really not great stuff. But they're like, nope, we're just doing it. So, like, it has to be great.
I know. I just can't wait.
He has to be great in it.
That's true.
It's one of the greatest DC. Like, if you ask anybody who's a comic book reader, the Flashpoint Paradox is one of the greatest storylines they have. Like, Flashpoint is incredible. But even with that, and I love The Flash, I hate Ezra Miller's rendition of the character. I think it is corny. It's just weird, off-putting.
I liked him in the Snyder Cut enough, but yeah.
It's very it's very Scooby-Doo. Like,
yeah, it's an Oscar-winning moment right there. Don't forget.
Everything is all like zoinks with him. Like,
yeah.
Batman.
Very shaggy type of Ezra Miller Flash version. Zoinks. I invaded another home. Zoinks. Burglarized my best friend's apartment.
Hey guys, I think Darkseid's up there, dude.
By the way, like, that actually
sounds
it,
like shit.
But Velma is so bad; it's unreal.
Still, like, I'm just not gonna watch. I'm done.
Oh my god, it's
my favorite type of bad. Now I haven't watched. I'm not gonna watch that shit. But it's my favorite type of poorly received, where it's making everyone question the career of the person that created it. Mindy Kaling's retroactively being canceled by people like, wait a minute, was she ever funny?
I like Mindy Kaling's other shows. Like, Sex Lives of College Girls is pretty funny. And, like, the other one, too. Rats. It's, like, the same
Mindy
concept.
Mindy Project?
But, like, no, not Mindy Project. Different one. She has two good shows that aren't – oh, Never Have I Ever. Like, she's good with other stuff. It's just – I don't know. Who was asking for R-rated Detective Velma? Like,
I actually think that could have been funny, though. I really think that could have been funny. Like, look at Harley Quinn, like, shouldn't have been, like, nearly as good as it.
Yeah, but that
been.
Character and has that reputation, right? Like, there's a reputation of Harley Quinn
works
of being.
Because it's a it goofy can play kids cartoon. To older people and it has a charm, but it's still like. It's the confines of its show, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to subvert expectations of Scooby Doo, I don't think. You know what I mean? I just don't know what that's made for.
I want rated R Scooby Doo. I still want James Gunn to do it at some point. He's always teased it. Like, he's always teased doing it.
Yeah.
He's always said he wants to do it, but, like, who knows? Now that he's got that WB.
That Freddie Prinze Jr. quote.
It's a talking dog.
Yeah. Get Linda Cardellini back, too. And by the way, that'll lead back to the same point I think I had about last time we talked about Velma. Velma was the sexiest Scooby Doo member by far.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. And that's something that's been retconned away from Daphne for sure. It is unbelievable how much harder Velma is.
Velma canonically has a massive dumper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, every single red edition of her, it's just like that. Yeah, she just has to. It's fucking. Horny ass dudes out there.
Very loud in this house. Here are the other ones. They're saying maybe Super Mario Brothers, Little Mermaid sounds like a definite. Scream, which is interesting because Scream just came out with a really good trailer. So I don't know what that will be. It could be maybe like a little more footage. Dungeons. Oh, Ken Jack is fired up for this one.
It's going to be Dragons, so stinky. Honor Among Thieves. You fools. You simple fools. Being like, this is going to be, oh, it's going to be a fun watch. It looks like it's going to be a good. This movie is going to be a fucking pile of shit. You know it is. You can tell based off these trailers. It's going to be so bad.
This is one of the worst financial decisions I've ever seen. They're paying $7 million for this ad. It's not going to make that opening weekend.
No.
I remember you know, where I was when I said million? That. I think yeah. I was like in my Dude. Shore House recording, and Gooch and I were like, this looks kind of good. We're like, this is kind of fun.
Yeah, and Jeff I immediately blasted both of you.
Jeff was drunk.
I know I wasn't either. That's just, I'm admitting I'm probably wrong, but I'm going to stick by it. The last
no, I respect
was,
that
was tough.
That's it looks so bad.
It's not like Trill Ballin's levels of saying downsizing is going to be the best movie or like most anticipated, but like it's still I'm going to have to eat some crow on that one.
It looks so fucking bad. I can't believe it.
It's just like Your Highness.
Yes, very very similar vibes to the great moneymaker Your Highness that everyone remembers, Danny McBride and Natalie Portman.
Pixar's Elemental, which actually looks really good. If you yes. Most people saw that before Avatar, and then Transformers: Rise of the Beasts.
I can't get a read on that movie. You know what I mean?
Me neither.
And I don't know if it's just I'm not a Beast Wars guy or whatever, but like Bumblebee was solid.
And the beginning of Bumblebee is the best Transformers live action thing ever made. It's fucking amazing. It's so cool. But it's like, did they do that? Like, did they? But then I don't know because it's a gorilla.
Yeah. But
they didn't even make that up for this, by the way. Like, I know that. But I'm just saying it's very different than – like, we've gone so far into the lore of Transformers without, like, really perfecting just – I still like the first one a lot. I think the first one
– I love the first – the first one's one of my favorite movies.
I think it's really well done. I think it has its faults. But, like, it's pretty fucking solid. And then it just – it becomes an unexplainable nightmare.
The first Transformers perfectly encapsulates movies in the late aughts. Like if I was to like if my kid would ask me like someday like what were movies like when you were a kid, I would just show him that and be like this changed our lives when we were kids. Like
it's the greatest movie ever made by a 13-year-old. Like it's I think it's accidentally charming. But it just plays out like one big teenage boy fantasy.
Well, Megan Fox.
Right, yeah.
My God. This is a horny episode. I apologize in advance. I mean, that scene was unbelievable. That stuck with me forever. That's had more of an impact on me from movies than like any scene from a Schindler's List or whatever. This big movie like that's supposed to leave a lasting impact on you. I'll remember Megan Fox leaning over the hood of that fucking engine block forever.
They fuck on top of Bumblebee at the end of the movie. Don't forget
about
that.
They do. Poor Bumblebee.
And then the next one, it's the Matrix of Leadership. It's like, oh, fuck.
What's the Matrix of Power? Or was it
Matrix of Leadership. It was like
the only thing I remember from the second one is Megan Fox on that motorcycle, just sitting still on the motorcycle as she's talking on the phone. That's the only thing I remember.
I remember the Transformer with testicles. I remember that one.
Yes,
that was the second one.
I'm right below the enemy scrotum. I'm underneath the enemy scrotum. That scene and what was I'm trying to think of some of the other Transformers names. Because they had Starscream, which
Skids and Mudflap, the controversial
Skids and
Mudflap ghetto bots.
Fucking Shia LaBeouf has sex with a Transformer in the beginning of the second one.
That's right.
It's so hot.
Yeah. Dude, fuck, they were on. Michael Bay was on. It was such a high. The only high that he could replicate when he's not killing a bird in Italy.
I saw that at the Bob Bullock History Museum in downtown Austin, Texas, because it's the only like real IMAX. I remember at the end of the movie, some guy in front of me at the end of the second Transformers just stood up and went, oh, yeah. He like clapped like that. We're like, all right.
People went nuts for those movies if you saw them with a crowd.
The first one was such a surprise. That was the thing, too. Like, your expectations were so in the dumpster for it. And it was not bad. So
once Cade Yeager got involved, this shit went downhill pretty bad.
Oh.
They added Mark Wahlberg, and the franchise got significantly worse.
Like, and Mark Wahlberg as an inventor.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably sure.
Speaking of standing ovations, I saw two movies yesterday, 80 for Brady and Knock at the Cabin. One of those movies did get a standing ovation from the crowd I was with.
People clapped at the end of 80 for Brady when I saw it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They were just stretching their backs, brother.
Enjoying their remaining.
That wasn't claps. That was breaking hip bones.
Graham cracker hips.
That was all the old people fucking after 80 for Brady. You just couldn't see with the lights off.
So that's the trailers. One trailer that is already out that I'm going to let Gooch start with, because he tweeted that he thought it looked solid. That is new White Men Can't Jump. Obviously, the big thing that kind of grabbed Cinque Walls, Lance Reddick, Tiana Taylor, all that. But it's Jack Harlow. That was the newsmaker when that came out. But Gooch, you seem to be all in on this.
All right, not all in, but the immediate reaction is that everyone is shitting on it, saying it's like the worst thing ever. And I'm like, it just isn't, does not look like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, I would agree.
Like, it looks like, say what you want about Jack Harlow, if he annoys you,
he's
whatever.
Not a good actor.
But how do we know that? He kind of looks
based off the
pretty
trailer.
Solid. He has charisma.
And that doesn't always apply to being a good actor. Gal Gadot, case in point.
I don't know if it's going to be great or even good, but I don't think it looks terrible. I think, like, especially as a streaming release, like on Hulu, like, I think it looks serviceable.
Yeah.
And we're also, the people acting like the first White Men Can't Jump is like a top five sports movie.
No, that's not true.
It's just, no, it's good with the basketball parts when it's just Wesley and Woody, but there's that romantic subplot that's fucking terrible. And the movie runs like 30 minutes long.
It's a pretty awesome movie.
Sacrilegious dumping on a classic in White Man Can't Jump.
Third highest rated bass movie on movierankings.net, which, by the way, has a potential.
Hoosiers.
Big news coming soon, by the way.
Hoosiers is one, and two is, it's not, I love Coach Carter. It's not Coach Carter. Basketball Diaries technically count as two.
Coach Carter's
Glory
five.
Road. Semi-pro?
No, Basketball Diaries is nine.
Nine, really? Okay. What's number two? It's not Above the Rim. It's not fucking
Six Man.
Was that the one with the ghost?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll give a little hint. Big, big, big time director.
Oh, Space Jam?
Oh, he got game?
He got game.
He got, I don't know why I went straight to Space Jam. That wasn't like the biggest director in the world. But like, I just heard like big and I was like, the Monstars. And like the first thing I thought was Space Jam. So that wouldn't have been up that high anyway.
Have you guys, this is a bit of a tangent, have you guys ever seen the Harvard student that did a full box score of the game in Space Jam? It's the funniest shit. One of the funniest lines ever is the fact that the Milton Bradley Monstar had 4 points, and he goes, in a world in which Elmer Fudd has a 20-foot vertical, this is the most realistic part of the movie.
Well, I mean, they give White Men Can't Jump, they have Woody Harrelson, who's all of like 5'4" dunk too. So like, it's, that's, movies get away with a lot of stuff.
They did full stats live on the NFL stat website for that fucking stupid flag football game the other day too. That poor person they made do that. Like, he's just on vacation in Vegas, like, he or she, and then they're like, hey, you got to do stats today. Like, what?
Or the ref too. The ref is sitting there eating shit from these Pro Bowl dudes trying to, like, and he's like, I don't know what the rules are. Like, I don't know what I'm doing here. These aren't regular football rules.
What a stupid thing. 15 million viewers later.
I had fun with the other stuff. Not the flag football game itself wasn't very fun.
No, I would agree.
Like their version of the dunk contest thing with the catch contest. I thought that was kind of cool.
They just got to refine it. I think they'll figure it out.
It should just be skills competitions, I think.
Yeah, correct. The actual game is pointless.
You can't be playing flag football. Come on.
I think there should be a very competitive game of backups. Like, just AFC backup versus NFC backup. Like, truly very competitive. And, like, going for money. Like, I would watch the shit out of that.
They did that what they call that? Not the spring game. Or was it the spring games, right? Where they would have, like, all the players that are, like, fighting for roster spots go out and just, like, play. Do something like that, yeah.
They should have another combine. I love the combine.
Yeah.
Who doesn't like the combine?
I think they wouldn't want to do that, though, because, like, imagine you're, like, known as being the strong guy, and, like, you just don't lift like that anymore, and you, like, you get outlifted by some rando. Oh, like, they don't want the numbers out there.
None of them are doing bench press. Like, nobody does that.
All right, movie time. We'll do one movie, then interview, then another movie. Here we go. Let's start off.
Did we touch on Last of Us?
Oh, yeah. Good Let's call. Do that. Last of Us Episode 4, shortest one yet. But I thought maybe like there's a very clear, we're in the zone on character development now too. This is a very like character based episode of like really them getting to know each other and really you as a viewer kind of getting past like, I think the surface level-y stuff, right? Like a lot of the, you know, the back and forth of like, oh, I'm the, you know, the angsty girl who's like trying to cause trouble, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, I'm the, You know, the depressed guy who just try to stay alive. I've lost everyone in my life. Like there's, you know, like there's the joke back and forth. I really liked it. And I again, someone has no idea what happens. And I'll let the two of you, Gooch and Kenjack, just kind of say like, what is the difference? And I know if you agree with this, Chris, too. I like this new storyline being added in about Kansas City and all that. Very intrigued by that. Gives it like a, because I didn't know, like would we just be, would it be the Clickers? Would it be, I know there's like another version or something. Like, would it be that? And so like, I like this being added in. I was a fan. And yeah. Again, the development of the characters in the story I was already invested. And it just makes me more fully invested now that we've kind of gotten past like the, like, will they ever be friends type, you know, vibe and energy.
Yeah, I think that's what I like most about this episode too. Is like, number one, they did a lot of one for one stuff from the cutscenes from the game, and like they nailed, a lot of like the most important ones, like that one where they drive away on the truck and she finds the porno magazine. Like that's a very funny cutscene from the game. That's a funny cutscene from the game that they nailed. That entire ambush scene was like almost shot for shot. It was crazy. I thought that was all great, and I also thought, like you were saying, it was very, very important. I think, especially after the last couple episodes, to like really. Like you got to hammer home the relationship between Joel and Ellie, because the last few ones, it's like, yes, they were there, but there was also more combining and giving you exposition and giving you like other people's relationships too. Like two episodes ago, that was Tess. And now in the last episode is obviously all Bill and Frank, not really anything with Joel and Ellie. And now this one, it's like, hey, here's the connection, because you need that connection and that audience investment before you move forward into the darker stuff that happens later on in it. And I think there's a lot of other cool stuff in this episode. This new Melanie Lynskey character in Pirates is cool. Also, or Pirate Raiders is cool. They, I think this happened in Pittsburgh in the game. Like it's in Kansas City, right?
Okay.
Yeah. Which would have been cool. I would have liked if they stayed in Pittsburgh. Get a little Rust Belt action in. But yeah, I think that what do you call it? That introduction of that character is interesting. I want to know more about that, and that'll play out in the next one. Getting like, I think a quick look at a bloater, also really interesting. And that's another form of infected we'll get later.
And I don't, if this is spoilery stuff, I guess, but there's been that one promo image of what I thought was a clicker, but it where it's like coming out of the fire.
Yeah, that's a bloater.
That's a bloater.
Okay, that's what I thought, because that one looked more intense. But that one's been used in like, that's always the GIF people use. It's an image. And I'm like, I don't even think I've, like, I don't know what that's from.
They're the hardest thing to kill in the game. They fucking suck to kill. I hate fighting them. But
they're fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
The other thing, you know, you're about to get killed.
Exactly. And they one hit you too, like, which is like miserable.
Too.
Yeah. Oh, they're fat. They're like big bloated bodies. The other thing I thought was cool, the last thing is the voice actor of Tommy from the video game getting a live in person role. As like, do you see the guy who looked like a Spec Ops Santa? Like he was like he's like special operator Santa Claus. Like that was the voice actor of Joel's brother Tommy in the game.
Oh, that's cool.
Just hearing his voice was interesting. I really liked just them getting a little bit of live action play. And actually, rest in peace to the actress who played voice Tess in the game, recently passed away. So
Annie Wershing.
Yeah. So rest in peace to her. But yeah, really, really liked this episode for all those reasons.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I've saw some criticism of this episode. I think
some people call it the weakest one yet, which I guess.
But it's the weakest one because it had to be. Like, right,
something has to be.
Right. It followed up, especially following up 3, which was like the third episode of The Last of Us was like a moment in time where people were like, holy shit, like this show is just completely rolling. They weren't going to top that. And the third one was such a unique story as well. But this one kind of gets back on track of the main story. And I think it's very good. They're just getting the characters right. And, you know, they're taking this so seriously in the best way. I've always really liked Melanie Lynskey as an actress. And my guess is she fucking hates Drew Barrymore, because I feel like Drew Barrymore just had the career that maybe she could have had, because they kind of look alike and sound alike to me. But I think she's a really talented actress. She's in one of my favorite movies, which is Shattered Glass. But I can give it the ultimate compliment that you can give any TV show, which is I'm really excited to see what the next episode has in store. It is not even coming close to losing me right now. So, yeah, it may be the weakest, but it still got a lot done. It never felt like a waste of an episode.
This isn't like when we were forcing you to watch Rings of Power or anything like that. This is a much more enjoyable experience for you, I imagine.
This has characters. Yeah.
Dude, don't shit on Galadriel. She doesn't deserve that right now.
She's a beast.
I'm with you guys. This is, and like, it's not a knock on it really anyway. It is my least favorite of the episodes, shortest of the episodes, but very necessary to build that relationship between Joel and Ellie. It was just nice, all those little intimate moments, her reading the joke book, Some of those jokes did get me to chuckle. And the one for one stuff was great, especially like Kent Jack brought up the truck crashing into the laundromat. Like that was exact, like pretty insane, especially taking it from like an action part of the game instead of just like a straight up cutscene where they're talking, like taking an actual level that you had to play through and putting it into live action was impressive. She's also a little psychopath.
Yeah, Ellie.
She's just a little sadist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the way she's written though. Like she doesn't feel, I don't know. And maybe part of it's the acting too, is her delivery of these lines feels authentic. It doesn't feel like a kid delivering, written dialogue.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, that's how a kid would be if they had to grow up in
that environment,
living hell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
This is a good example too of, and this is something that pops up in the Marvel and DC era of like serious, funny. You can have good drama and still have humor in it if it's written well. This is a 100%. Funny episode.
Exactly.
It wasn't like overly funny like throughout, but there's a couple very funny things that give it levity and give it some humanization that like you can relate to. This is a great example of that. Not the best episode, just like the little moments here and there, you're like, oh yeah, it's like just seriously doesn't mean it needs to be just dour and depressing for 2 hours. Like you can have a couple moments to at least make characters relatable and enjoyable.
So, and also I've heard that diarrhea joke a million times. It's funny every time.
Mm-hmm. I said it out loud. I was like,
yeah, I
know. I was like, runs in your jeans. I was like, I knew that one. I understand that reference literally like in real life.
So that is Last of Us. Next episode looks fucking sick. Looks like it's gonna be a little more action packed. The bloaters and all that shit. So yeah, I'm excited.
It's no fun. It's gonna scare your guys' asses off.
80 for Brady.
Mm. Tell you what, I didn't give it an 80. Just getting that out of the way right now.
85.
90.
Four older female friends and longtime New England Patriots fans travel to Houston to watch their hero Tom Brady and the Patriots play in Super Bowl 51 in 2017. That was the 28-3 comeback against the Atlanta Falcons, which I've always wondered, how did they come back? Now we know.
Yeah, exactly. I know. The movie is actually informative.
Now we know. Lily Tomlin, Jane Fonda, Rita Moreno, Sally Field, four fucking icons of their craft.
Three Academy Award winners. No.
Four fucking icons. For as iconic as the female cast is, just as doofy as the male cast in this movie. Just the names you can rattle off. And there's some good ones in here. Don't get me wrong. Bob Balaban, great actor. Love Patton Oswalt. Rob Corddry, Billy Porter, Harry Hamlin. I just skipped over a name because there's one name that has a significant role in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'll just say it now. Guy Fieri plays an integral role in this movie.
Mm-hmm. Which is what makes this movie straight out of like 2010. Like this movie is so out of time. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just weird to watch a movie about a sporting event from 5 years ago because it's not been long enough. It's not been long enough to make a movie, and it's recent enough for you to remember. It's just weird. It's a weird time to make a movie. Okay, anyway, 80 for Brady. I think it definitely carries an advantage of being a movie that you assume is dog shit.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
It definitely helps. It definitely helps that you expect to go see this movie and you're like, wow, that is a bag of ass. There's a lot of charming and endearing parts of this movie. I think in the end, that's nice. Watching those four titans of the industry act together is always good. Obviously, Jane Fonda and Sally Field Lily Tomlin have a great chemistry. Grace and Frankie, but this is I don't know, man.
Not a fan.
I saw it after I saw the hype of like kind of fun. This movie
Aegis Jeff. That's what I call him.
It's just like it's just it's
it's so absurd and so stupid, and not even a way that like I found very fun. Like, whatever. Like, it's so whatever to me. It's not bottom of the barrel. I'll be honest. I thought this was going to be like a 10 or a 15. It's not. It's fine. For what it is, fine. It's a flat 50 for me. Flat 5-0, perfect across middle. I did not have one movie rated a 50 last year, so there you go. Not that that means anything. 50 out of 100, 80 for break. I mean, whatever. It's not as bad as I thought it would be. It's just like, it's so whatever.
You should have put that on the watch list that we released. I mean, whatever. It says Jeff Lowe.
What did I say today, Gooch? Did I say like okay? I said like okay, sure.
Yeah,
it's fine.
That's basically it. Yeah, like that's the movie.
Yeah,
real thoughtful. Come on.
So I think I'm with you on the biggest point of it, in that it's like, I think it's just inoffensive. It's one of the most remarkably inoffensive movies I think I've ever watched. Where like, I like you, and like I'm assuming all four of us actually, we went into that movie and we're just like, yeah, it's going to be Wild Hogs, but for old gals.
Yeah.
And there's Tom Brady involved. I like but Wild. It's like, it's just a bunch of old girls chilling at the Super Bowl with crappy cameos and like a sweet message of friendship. It's like, it's very difficult for me to find stuff to dislike about the movie. In fact, I think it's like, there's more things that I would say I like in general. And like, number one, I looked it up to make sure I'm pronouncing his last name right, because I always liked him on Twitter whenever he posts anything, any of his videos. Mark Rebiya.
Yeah. Or wait, no, I think, is that how it's pronounced? Or I think
I sounded it out based off of what he said.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Do that then. Rebiya. Yeah. I think you might be right.
Rebiya. Yeah.
So I loved watching his clips on Twitter because he's fucking hilarious. Super fun funkster, I guess you would call him. His little cameo I really enjoyed. I do think that the sort of chemistry between all of them was great in like a way where you're not really expecting like major acting chops. It was like you're watching four people just having a fun time. And that's what I think all four of them were doing. All of them, like, they weren't in this movie to win a fucking Oscar or whatever. They weren't in this movie to do anything else. Just having a goofy, fun time. And I enjoyed that. I think Jane Fonda was really good in it specifically. Really liked her role. Were you against the whistling, Gooch, or was that Jane Fonda hatred in your face?
No, the whistling. I thought somebody was whistling because Jane Fonda's name got brought up.
Yeah, she got name dropped. Yeah, well,
I didn't know if that was in my head or.
I wonder. There's one moment from this movie, and it rang. It maybe pissed me off. I don't know how to explain the feeling. I'm curious if it did the same for you. When Tom Brady gave that like earnest speech at the end of it, just days after he had retired, basically in real life, it made me fucking pissed off. It made me pissed off. I don't know about you guys.
It didn't piss me off, no. There was a brief moment where I wondered, like,
is it planned?
Did he fucking retire because this movie was about
to fucking end? Yes. I said the other day, I was talking to one of our colleagues, Kirk Minahan. I was like, I mean, that timing doesn't seem very
coincidental. No way. No fucking chance. That was definitely on purpose.
Here's my theory, though, because they have that moment in the mid-credits with him. My guess is.
Wait.
Wait, what?
There's a post mid credit in this?
Yeah, with him on the beach with the four girls talking about retirement.
Brother, that movie ended and I walked straight out the theater.
it was like 2 seconds after it ended. It was like they showed credits. Like, okay, I think it was a reshoot because he announced he unretired after last year. And so they made this little thing about like, I don't know when I'm going to hang it up at the very end. So I'm like, okay, maybe this wasn't planned. But yeah.
You fucking with us right now?
No, people... People in the fucking chat, there is a mid-credit sequence, the four of them on a beach, they're like drinking martinis or whatever, you know, whatever the beach people drink, and they're talking about retirement, and then one of them's like, you know, and then you cut, you know, they pan over and it's Brady on a beach towel next to the four of them talking about retirement.
This quick scene of them sitting at the beach, that's retiring, yeah.
Damn. So what you're saying is Tom Brady was having a little fun in the sun?
No,
I know that's something he's always wanted to do.
Oh, did you? You meant that sexually, didn't you? You fucking weirdo.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
I've been commenting on that.
What's your rating?
Oh, my rating on it. I'm like, it's very difficult to like give me anything under a 69 because I want it to stay buttered, and I don't think it's a movie I can be like, I'm not buttering this because, again, inoffensive, entertaining enough to watch, probably a little too long, but like,
yeah,
it's fucking fun. It's fucking fun. It's fun. That's it. It's nothing about it going to make you laugh your ass off. It's just a fun time. I think I would watch this with like parents or whatever, maybe not with friends, but it's an entertaining enough time.
Yeah, and that's really my review of it. Really boils down to I can't hate something I know my mom would just fucking love. Like the audience, it's made for a very specific audience, and I think the audience it's made for will absolutely eat this shit up. Like it's it executes in that regard. I thought there were a bunch of parts that made me laugh. I mean, Lily Tomlin dabbing. The historical accuracy of when they're in the nursing home and they're watching the season of The Bachelor with the platinum Vagine girl on TV.
Oh, she rocked.
That is pretty funny.
What was her name? She was like Russian or something. Or Greek? Fuck.
Corinne,
yeah. That was a good season.
Them taking a shot at Matt Patricia, what I can only assume is a shot at Matt Patricia, not knowing how to call a defense and having Sally Field step into the booth.
Yeah, Detroit fans are going to love this movie.
Yep.
Dude, I mean, they just had a guy with a beard calling the defense, and then he had no fucking idea what he was doing. And Sally Field takes over, and all of a sudden things are fixed. Her husband, by the way, Sally Field's husband, what an idiot.
What a fucking fool. Total pussy goop. Whip nothing.
Just the mouse of a man.
The biggest simp ever, yeah.
My wife, I need you to check my paper for me, please.
You need to check my paper.
Yeah. Need to make sure it's okay, wifey.
Fuck you, dude. Making us all look bad.
The one thing I would have changed, there's not much to change here. I mean, it is what it is, but like the sad subplot of her maybe having cancer or like,
yes.
We didn't, that was very pretty unnecessary, random. Right?
Yeah. Like,
this would have worked if it was just the four of them going to the Super Bowl.
Fucking movie.
Yeah.
Like, why? Why was that there?
It turned into that movie Fanboys all of a sudden.
that's why I didn't know who's, if that was going to beat me to it, but I was like, this is like old horny women fanboys.
Except in that movie, like it was integral to the plot that one of the characters.
And he dies too.
Yeah, no, they don't. Yeah, he actually passed away. Yeah, I actually like that movie. But,
I did like how they all wore the Casey Smith half jersey at the end of it. Half Bucks, jersey.
I had that tweet lined up, and then I was like, I probably shouldn't do it. Like, I was going to do like right the no context spoilers and then just tweet out the picture of Casey and that's the jersey.
I know. I respect her because her stance has always just been the same. She's like, yeah, I'm a Tom Brady fan. I'm like, well, I have nothing to retort to with that. It's sure. I get it. I wish I could be just a Philip Rivers fan.
Dude, Tom Brady talking to Lou every time she saw him on TV, like she would just hallucinate that he was so stupid.
So dumb.
So dumb.
Talking bobblehead and all that shit.
You know, when the trailer for this dropped, we all said it looked awful, but I was the one guy on here who said, I don't think this might not be as bad as it looks. And I think I was correct there. And the reason it works was the reason I thought it might, which is these four women are just good together. Like, I don't think it's a very well-written film. I mean, it's not. Fucking Lily Tomlin wins the Super Bowl. Like, it's not. It's complete nonsense. But those four together work. And I'm under the theory they intentionally made this trailer as shitty as possible to lower people's expectations. You kind of alluded to that, Jeff. Like,
yeah.
Even the trailer shows off a lot of the bad parts, but it makes them worse. Like the editing in the trailer is so much worse than it is in the movie. So these four together, and yet whatever is such a perfect term for this. Because yes, there's moments of complete lunacy, like that are just not even close to reality. There's moments that aren't funny. There's moments that make you cringe. And yet the whole, even the bad stuff, I just shrug my shoulders out. Like, yeah, fine. Like this is going to work for the audience it's aimed for. I mean, it's a bizarre movie to even grade because for its demographic, I think it's close to perfect. But is it something I'd watch again? No. But I don't know, man. It has a legitimate charm to it. And I'm with you on the cancer subplot was a bit bizarre. But even that, like, I don't know. Yeah, they're fucking four old ladies.
I'll be devil's advocate. I think this could have been better for its demographic.
I don't think there's much I would think to change to be like, hey,
make I just think some of it's so just like goofy, like the Guy Fieri stuff. Just like there's just so many like,
I don't know. Guy Fieri is very in 2017. I don't know if you remember this. He was everywhere. We couldn't escape that dude. He was throwing out signed Lean Cuisines out into the crowd.
He was that era. Fifth Harmony. That's right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that this couldn't have been a better movie. Of course it could have been. I just think like, I think a heavy majority of the people this is aimed at are going to not just like it, but love it. So it's a 65 for me. Like, wait for it to come on streaming, show it to your mom, and she'll show it to her friends if she knows how to use Netflix. And, you know,
she'll email it to all her friends.
Yes. So, yeah, that's where I stand on it.
The chant is really what gets me. The 5, 4, what do they say? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Go, Tom Brady.
And brilliant chant. That's like a Bill Simmons type chant right there. That's excellence in chanting.
You've been watching him for 25 years and that's all you got?
what was the actual Bill Simmons anti-LeBron chant? What did he say he wanted to say? Like, they're so stupid. I forget what – do you remember this?
It was bad, and then they got absolutely fucking boat raced.
He was like, you can't hack it or some stupid shit. It was so bad. Fuck, I wish I remembered.
Yeah, Kyrie left you or some shit like that.
Yeah.
Just like weird. Just like so fucking stupid.
Also, Alex Moffitt and Rob Corddry as like the Boston sports. That was just a terrible caricature of Boston people. They should have
gotten better people for that.
Yeah, just cast Dave.
I was going to say, you should have gotten Dave. And
80 for Brady.
Oh my!
I mean, sure. I didn't. I gave it a 50, but I didn't put a no in my recommendation on it. Like, I think.
Yeah, it's.
If you know what you're doing, so you're not gonna. You're not gonna be like. I mean, you might. It's not good. It's not. I gotta stick by that. It's not a good movie. But it's not. It's not what we thought it could be. I thought that could have been like Poker Face. By the way, not the Poker Face, the Russell Crowe movie.
Yes, brilliant film.
Just bad.
Brilliant film. Absolutely.
Series is good so far.
Series.
Highly recommend.
No, yeah. Watch that on Peacock. Poker Face with Russell Crowe. Whoa. One of the worst 2022. Real bad.
Speaking of Peacock, that was a good segue.
There you go. Speaking of Peacock, The Traitors on Peacock. Really cool reality show where they mix past winners and contestants from Survivor, Big Brother, The Bachelor, Bravo shows like Summer House and Real Housewives with regular people. It's got a little bit of like The Mole, that old reality show by Anderson Cooper. We talked about that. We talked about a bunch of other things as well. GoldenEye. Alan Cummings was great. Really crapped on the Brits.
Yeah, which is – I love that. He's instantly a Hall of Fame guest for that alone to me.
Yeah, so here's our interview with Alan Cummings.
But nobody – has ever looked as good hosting a reality show than I think you in The Traitors, which is now on Peacock, which if you are a fan of reality, I watched this. I didn't just watch this because we're talking to you. I watched this before I knew we were going to interview you. If you're a fan of reality, I'm a fan of Survivor, Housewives, all that. This is such a great show. It combines together the Bravo stars you love, the stars from The Bachelor, from Survivor, and regular people, and creates a whodunit murder mystery type reality show that is on Peacock that I highly suggest to anybody who wants to watch it. What was it about this show that really excited you the most? Because it fits the culture right now of mysteries being very in.
Yes, I guess it just sort of hit something in the zeitgeist. For me, it was, I'm not a big reality show watcher, but I was aware when they showed me the Dutch, it's based on a Dutch show. They showed me that show first and I became obsessed with it. And I sort of think it's like a burger, like a triple decker burger. There's so many different things on it and all the toppings and fixings that you see in America. It's like that. And I just really liked the fact that I couldn't understand why they asked me to do it. You know, it's not my bag, but I realized they wanted me to sort of play a character. And I said to them, so you want me to be like a James Bond villain hosting this thing? And I said, maybe I should bring my dog and pat her as I'm talking to the contestants. And they're like, yes. And I was actually going to bring my dog and she was all set to come. But the last minute, her papers, her shots went up to date because of the pandemic. So she might be in this, if they do a second season, she might come. But I sort of really loved the fact that I was able to sort of play this character. I play a sort of eccentric Scottish laird who has invited all these people to his castle. It's not my castle, as I say. I do not own a castle. That's to play a character in a sort of reality competition show was that really intrigued me because I don't think anyone's ever done that before.
Yeah, it is super, super unique in that sense. Like there have been some shows that maybe have like the
this is real but fake type element to it. But you get to really play something as unique as I've ever seen in reality. It's, if you're thinking of the Jeff Probst of the world's folks, that's not what you get here. You get a very different style thing. Who was there anyone that you maybe modeled yourself after, any type of like detective or mystery show or character that you're like, I'm going to play that type of character?
Sort of, I mean, a sort of haughty kind of sleuth, a James Bond villain, and a sort of, you know, Scottish layer, those people who are sort of landowners in Scotland who are sort of slathered in tartan and much more Scottish than real Scottish people. That was the sort of the combo. And I have a voice that's kind of a heightened version of me. Everything is a bit heightened and more theatrical and more camp than I actually am in real life. And I'm quite camp, so it's off the charts.
How much different is hosting from regular acting? Because like, you're obviously prolific on the stage and everything like that. And I imagine it's almost like, because like, we host podcasts, it's not the same thing, but you're commanding a room in a hosting situation beyond presenting to just the actual audience out over the TV. So like, how much different is it, I guess, from regular acting?
Well, it's sort of, I mean, I felt like I was playing a character all the time, but I often would have to sort of do lots of explanations of things and, you know, rules and stuff like that. So it's kind of unusual. I mean, it's a hybrid of many things that I'd never done before. But also the good thing was a lot of the time they let me do it in one long take. All that, you know, I'd go in, I would sort of deliver this big long speech, I would do it, and I'd walk out. And that was, I think that's really unusual, because normally you sort of do it in bits and you hang on, you get coverage and you wait. And I felt it was really important that I had this distance from the contestants and was this sort of, you know, sort of icy, quite scary figure to them. And so to achieve that, we tried to keep me apart from them and then just do my bits in one and then walk away. So that was unusual.
It's very, very dramatic, as you said, your role. It's heightened. You say it's heightened off maybe the normal camp that you have. But I think your acting and what you're portraying out there is only trumped by what we said in the beginning, your wardrobe. How much did you get to say on what you picked out for each outfit? The scarves, the looks. It was and to see, not just that, to see you in that type of stuff while they're doing physical competitions, that alone kind of makes the show just worth it in itself.
I know, they're like pushing, sweating buckets and pushing barrels up a hill, and I'm sort of lounging in an armchair with a beret and a smoking jacket on. It's sort of in a decanter of whiskey. The most hilarious thing is that the majority of those clothes are mine, the actual suits and things, the base things. But the stylist is called Sam Spector. He was the one who kind of, you know, gave them big some Scottish scarves and sashes and brooches and berries and stuff. He sort of gave them, I mean, I have quite a lot of, you know, snazzy suits. I kind of get sent things to wear at things over the, you know, I've got loads, I've kept a lot of them over the years. But actually it's not just about wearing something snazzy, it's about kind of something snazzy and then making it into a sort of, taking it to another level. So I went to Sam, I met him actually after I'd spoken to the producers, and we'd worked out that it was going to be this sort of weird, eccentric, layered, and a sort of slightly villainous, slightly James Bond villain. So I went to him with that and asked, and then he came to my house and looked at things, and then he went away and he cleverly sort of put everything on top of each other in these things on the computer, and I could see what he was, and then all these sort of weird little slippers and stuff he wears. And then there's a couple, you know, there's a few things that were new, like there's, I now own two capes, which I never thought I would say.
Capes need to come back. I mean, capes were a great look when they were around.
I am trying to bring the cape back. I really am. Also, I'm trying to bring the cummerbund back. I think the cummerbund is a very underrated article of clothing. It's useful. It's practical. It keeps the tummy in. And, you know, I think it's I like it. And it's sort of a less aggressive girdle. And so I'm trying to bring that back. But yeah, the cape, I've got this one cape that was sort of like a little French policeman's cape, you know? Your arms come through the little slits. And it was because we did scenes where, usually in the dark, when I'm sort of coming out of the castle, talking about this traitor slithering to their lair, and big, long sort of crane shots, and I had to do those all at once. And so they wanted me to be wearing something so they couldn't see what I was wearing underneath, so that it wouldn't have to match to the other stuff in each episode. So I had this, my cape, and also these really long blue vegan leather gloves that went up to my biceps, like Audrey Hepburn in My Fair Lady gloves. So hilarious. And oh, they would, God, sort of stick out. It was like it would come out, my arms would come out, and they would just go on and on and on and on with these blue things. So I've got those. I don't know if I'll ever wear those in my life, but I'm looking for an occasion. But the cape, I'm definitely going to work soon.
Gunnis, yeah, needs to come back into everyday life. Absolutely. favorite host for you? Who's a host of yours that you maybe grew up watching or admire in this, like in this type of space in reality? Not reality, but interview host. We're big Graham Norton fans, but just like who's a host in the television or streaming space that you've always been a fan of? It could be older or new.
Well, I love Graham too. I love going on his show because it's one of these, you know.
Is it the most fun show? Has to be.
Yes, because you get drinks, first of all. And and then you don't just have to do your bit and then go away. Everyone's all out all together. So it's like a kind of nice conversation where someone's sort of directing. It's like a dinner party with no food, I suppose. And then someone's saying, oh, tell us your story. And then you can interrupt and join in. And everyone has, you know, the chance to have their little say. And because a lot of these shows, it's that structure where you go, the host does their monologue, and then there's a skit, and then it's you, and then but you kind of hang around. And I think it would be much better if you were all on together. Yeah. And also, I think alcohol is a good thing to have at talk shows. It really, the ones I've done where you get alcohol are so much better. They're better shows. You're more relaxed. The audience are, you know, everything seems better with a couple of glasses of wine in you. So and Graham's, he's a good friend of mine, actually. I really like him. I think he's so good at what he does. He's just got it down, and he doesn't feel the need to make it about him so much. And I think in America, I love going on Seth Meyers. I think he's so bright and clever, but he lets you talk, you know, and it's a conversation. It's not a series of questions, because you'd be amazed that sometimes you sort of say something and you lob a funny line at someone, they go, anyway, your next movie is blah, blah, blah. You think, oh. So I think it's a great skill. And I don't think there's that many people who are really good at it. A lot of people are good at it, but when someone is, when it feels like a conversation. Also, the other thing I used to like going on Charlie Rose, but of course then I discovered that he would walk naked through his office during the day, and it kind of got less attractive. but that was really interesting because you didn't feel you had to, on all these shows, you inevitably have to sort of, you know, regurgitate stories. You've got to sort of, they tell you the pre-interview, you talk and they say which things they want you to say, and you've got to be kind of funny and charming and sparkling. And it's actually quite interesting when it's not like that, it's just like a conversation. And that on his show, I used to really enjoy that because there wasn't even really a pre-interview. So you just went on and you just talked to this, had a great chat with someone. And I think sometimes when it's too sort of set up just for you to do your gags, it's kind of, I don't know, it's a little, I think it's a sort of an old format that could do with being refreshed a wee bit, I think.
I actually worked on TV for a couple of years or more. I always say one of the more shocking but surprising things that I learned was I didn't really know what a pre-interview was. And I didn't know that, like, when someone like yourself promotes something, you're doing the interview the day before, basically, just to carve out every little old story, maybe like an old photo of you in detail. And it's kind of like that happens every person. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny. And also, like, what two things have changed that now, when you do a pre-interview, they basically just looked at your Instagram feed and they just ask you questions about that. That's what happens now. And it's actually why it's quite good. You talk about controlling the narrative. You know that. I knew exactly today I was on some, and I knew they were going to ask me about that I'd been in Bhutan and I'd bought a Bhutanese costume and stuff like that. So it's in a way, it's actually, it's not such a bad, it feels lazy, but actually if you supply them with the things you want to talk about, then it's fine. And also the other thing that happens is that you actually, and I go through life thinking, oh, that would be quite a good story to tell on a talk show. Terrible, but I actually do. Like I told this one this morning, it's actually quite funny. when I was in Bhutan, I climbed this big mountain, and there's a temple on sort of stuck on the top of this mountain. It's called Tiger's Nest. And the altitude's insane. I was exhausted. So I did it, got blessed by the priest, came back down, then went for a massage in the hotel I was in. And the guy was wearing a mask, and he gave me a little mask. He said, "Will you wear this?" And I said, "You know, I'll be fine. You've got one on my head in the middle of the thing, so I'll be fine." And also his English wasn't that great. And I just was sore. I wanted to get a massage. So but I took the mask. I thought, I'll wear that on the plane tomorrow. And so then I get to the airport, and I take the little thing out, start to put the mask on. I think, oh, there's two holes. And I realized it was the modesty little thing they wanted me to wear for the massage. And the two holes were two leg holes. And he had asked me to wear a modesty thing. And I had said, no, I just went naked on the thing. And then I was trying to get one on my face. thinking hopefully it was they're not a used. Mask.
You're banned from airports now. Yeah.
Yes. Because I thought, is this a balaclava? I thought I was doing like a terrorist. Just awful. I think, honestly, bad for the poor little masseur.
Our next questions were going to be about X2, because like, we are big fans of Nightcrawler in general. But I honestly want to do normally at the end something called a six pack of questions. I honestly just want to give them to you now because I feel like your answers are already great. And I just want to jump right into it. Six pack of questions. Weirdest fan interaction. You had a very funny story on Graham Norton actually about the Comic Con you did in a shopping mall, which I thought that was really good. But weirdest fan interaction. Weirdest fan interaction out in public.
When you see someone with your signature tattooed on their body. Things like that, or being asked to sign a girl's boobs. Someone's, you know, people sometimes ask you to sign their ass and stuff like that. That's pretty weird. Yeah.
Okay, you can.
Signature is wild. Signature tattoo is crazy.
And it's a great honor. I think, oh my god. And then sometimes they ask you to do it, and they say that I'm going to get your name tattooed. So you're so nervous writing on the Sharpie on their body because you think, I fuck this up, they're going to look terrible for the rest of their lives.
You can only save one of the following Scottish actors and the other two become English instantly. It's tough.
This is really good. Oh, what? This is great.
Ewan McGregor is one. James McAvoy is second. And then Sean Connery, in his case, he would be retroactively turned into an Englishman.
I couldn't do that to Sean. Be James, or I think I'd turn Ewan into an Englishman. I just feel the others would be so tortured.
Because James McAvoy too, especially his accent is thick. Like it is like when you hear him in a regular interview, it's like he loves being Scottish, and I would hate that too.
He's from Glasgow, and there's a hilarious, very long story that won't bore you with, but. About this actress in Scotland, and like she's talking about people, and the worst thing she can think to say about someone is practically English. That's like the worst insult.
Oh my god!
That's home when you say that.
You get the green light to make any theater adaptation you want with an infinite budget. What play would you pick?
Well, it's a film of a play.
A film of a play, yeah.
Well, actually, there's a film, Uncle Vanya, there's a, you know, Neil LaBute, he and I were sort of trying to get this version of an adaptation of Uncle Vanya made during lockdown. We didn't succeed, but that's one of those things that I feel I've still got Uncle Vanya in me. So yeah, I'd probably try and get that made.
I got a note. Speaking of Broadway in New York, I do. Well, we'll have to bleep this part out. I don't want people to know where we live, but I walk by I live on 53rd Street in Manhattan. So I walk by a Club Cummings sign on the back of 53rd Street by Studio 54. I see it every day. I've seen it 9 years. I've seen that sign every day when I walk home off the subway. So just
that's there saying it's the original home of Club Cummings because it was in my dressing room at Studio 54 when I was doing Cabaret. And I think it's so hilarious because it looks like the actual Club Cummings sign in Club Cummings. And I think some people think it really is Club Cummings. And also the fact that they've managed to get some kind rich person to give a lot of money to sponsor that sign. And it's sort of like a blue plaque, you know, Queen Elizabeth slept here or something. And it's just that that's where my first
When I tell people who walk by with me, they're like, is that it? And I'll just go, yeah. And I know it's not because I eventually looked it up. Like, yeah, that's it. Because I just want to make my street seem cooler. I'm like, yeah, that's it right there. That's, yeah. Probably in there right now. Yeah.
What's a role you auditioned for, really, really wanted, but didn't get? I feel like every actor has one of these. It could be if you got it, yes. Maybe wouldn't have liked it, but yeah.
Oh, it was in that thing. Actually, Ewan was in the film. What do you call it? It was with Ewan and Renee Zellweger. Sort of a
Moulin Rouge. Doris Day. Wait.
No. Moulin Rouge. It was a sort of a parody of like the Rock Hudson Doris Day films. And it was Thingabob, lovely, what's his name, from Frasier. The brother in Frasier. Got it. You know, what's his name again? Oh, absolutely lovely man.
Yeah. David Hyde Pierce.
David Hyde Pierce got it. Yeah, I can't remember what it's called. It was really good. It was sort of a parody pastiche thing of those Doris Day, and it was
Ewan Down with Love.
Down with Love.
Ah,
triggered. Yes. Down with Love. I really wanted to be in that. And I actually turned down this other film that I really wanted to do. To hold out to see if I was gonna get it, and I didn't get it. Showbiz.
Yep, that's showbiz, baby. What's a role you struggled with the most? Could be in theater or TV. Movies, anything?
Struggled as in had trouble playing it or just had a miserable time?
No, not a miserable time. I would say just struggled getting the character right, I would say.
Gosh, it's most of them at the start, I have to say. I don't know. I suppose when I did this version of Macbeth where I played all the parts nearly. And that was so fucking hard, and I had to basically learn all of Macbeth and just trying to differentiate between each part, and then I was also playing someone who was doing that in a hospital. See what I mean? I was playing someone who was having a sort of a psychological fugue or something and was doing that, and so that was a lot. Yeah, that was probably one of the hardest things I've done. Yeah.
All right, last one. Just name an English food that's terrible.
Oh God!
Where would I begin? Oyster.
What's that cabbage thing? Hang on, spotted dick is the pudding. Oh shit! What's it called? It's like cabbage. Oh, I can't remember. Just cabbage. Just imagine who would have cabbage as a side dish.
I'm trying to look it up right now, and every dish I'm looking up when I search English cabbage dish looks terrible. So I don't really.
Yeah. It's called something like, toad in the hole.
Oh, toad yeah. We looked this up once. Do you remember that, Jeff? We were going to serve it before one of our shows one day, and it's hard to figure out. What did we end up with? Welsh rarebit? Was that the
we did have Welsh rarebit at one point. Yeah.
Welsh rarebit. What is that again? That's cheesy, like something,
cheese,
isn't it?
Cheese on toast,
like
I guess.
Bread and then toast. Just like, yeah.
It's good though. It was solid.
It's not the most visually appetizing thing.
Yeah.
Cabbage. I mean, Scotland, we've got a lot of weird things, but I don't know. Yeah, the food's better than it used to be in Britain in general, but that is a sort of, boarding school staple that sort of grown men get weak at the knees for, because it reminds them of, I don't know, cold showers and matron. Yeah.
we have a few more minutes with you, so we got to jump back to some old projects. Reminder, watch The Traitors on Peacock. Absolutely highly suggest if you're a fan. Again, any of them, Big Brother, Ryan Lochte, which I guess he had his own reality show, but I'll just say Ryan Lochte. It's like the name Ryan Lochte explains itself. Check out The Traitors. But
great trickster.
Two things that you were in a while ago at this point have continued to have a massive impact on culture. One of them has popped back up recently because it's being re-released, I believe, and that is the GoldenEye video game. The video game for the movie GoldenEye is – I'm 30. Ken Jack, you're 28, right? Like it's
coming up on 30, yeah.
We are in that age where like we grew up with the video game, not just the movie – but the video game adaptation of that movie, how much is like, do you get royalties for the video game? Like how much has the video game
brought up to you? No, I fucking don't.
Oh, no way. That sucks.
No, because it was before, like that was the first sort of, it was a Nintendo 64, wasn't it? So I think that's the first sort of film video game thing. there was. So no, we didn't get anything. It was before the days. Now when you do those sorts of films, it's got a clause in it for video games, all that stuff. No, get a penny. And what was funny was that when it came out, so when the movie came out, and then about a couple of years later, before the video game came out. So one day I was at a friend's house and a little boy said, oh, I always choose you. I was like, oh, that's nice, not knowing. And I said, what? And he said, oh, he's got this video game you're in. I was like, what? And so I went through to his room and we started playing it. And I like played myself, or you know, chose myself, and I was me. And I was so excited. And I went home and an assistant called Landon at the time. I remember going, Landon, it's so great. I'm in a video game. And because at the time that was something that people could say, you know, it wasn't like,
yeah,
that. And it's like the mid 90s. And he went, oh yeah, I know, I've got it. If you piss me off, I go home and shoot you in the balls. And that's what you could do. You could actually, you could shoot me in the balls or in the leg or something. And I would survive to help you through to the next round. So you could be sadistic to me. And still I would be there to like help you through. I thought that was hilarious. So yeah, I saw something about it. I saw people talking about it recently and it was being rejigged. So yeah. That's what they're doing. They're re-releasing it.
Yeah, for a new generation. But the same thing, basically.
Good luck to them. Yeah.
We'll get you a phone number. Get the royalties baked in now. It's not too late. Yeah. It's not too late.
All right. It was just so many. It was just before, and also it was before I was, you know, it's when I was still working in Britain, and I was in the Screen Actors Guild, so I don't think I get residuals for that being on telly and everything that I would if I was in SAG.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, that was the days before I saw the light.
Yeah, one of the things I always loved about GoldenEye the movie is that you got to work along, and I don't know if you knew this at the time, arguably the most prolific dyer in Hollywood history in Sean Bean. Sean Bean has dyed in over 20 of his movies, and he's the most prolific dyer. No actor has dyed in movies more than Sean Bean. And
why
he dies.
Why do we want to
think about it? Lord of the Rings. He's Boromir, he dies. He's in GoldenEye. Oh, yeah, he has the crazy death scene. Like everything else, even like the only
for
thing
England,
think of,
James. For England. That's what he says it. For England.
The whole station falls on his face. Like it's crazy. But yeah, he was one of the greatest dyers in history.
Would that be a tough thing to be typecast as? The guy who just dies? Oh, you're the dye guy.
At least he's alive first. It'd be terrible if you're just dead. But I didn't know that. That's so funny about I just remember spending so long in that underground station thing with Sean, and then really wide shots when we're standing looking at the computers and everything, and it just seemed to go on forever, for days and days of just standing, you know, doing stuff in that little room. But it was such fun. I really loved making that film. It was a hilarious time. And it was a huge thing for me as well in my career.
Mm. Provided a lot of great levity too. That was you were definitely the big highlight, I would say. Every Boris moment always killed me every time in GoldenEye, specifically the little animation, the 8-bit like animation of like Boris.
Oh yes, yes.
Always killed me.
And still, like I regularly am walking down the street and people would shout, "I'm invincible!" Things like that. My God, that's right. That's me. Yes, yes. That's correct.
Before we let you go, I gotta ask you, give me one, and you're not a big reality person, but I don't know if there's been names thrown at you. Who's one person that you would want to throw? You gotta be the reality person now because I hosted a big show. Who's one person you'd throw in another season of The Traitors? Who would you want to see in that world?
You could say celebrities too, right? We can expand.
You could say celebrities. You don't have to be reality. It could be any type of celebrity.
You know, I think it'd be hilarious is Billie Jean King. I think she'd love it, and she's so competitive.
Very.
And she's also got those glasses. You know, she would be able to hide her emotions, and I think she'd really enjoy it. I love Billie Jean. She's such I did that tennis film a couple of years ago about her that Emma Stone played her in.
Yeah.
And so we'd hang out quite a lot and club actually to my bar. one night, and that was hilarious, just having Billie Jean King in your bar. But yeah, I think I'd go. I mean, I guess going in this, we're going to have sports people. Billie Jean King. That's my answer.
I like that. Yeah, you got luck. You got it. Yeah, I like that. That's a great answer. Thank you so much again. If you ever want to come out with us in New York, whenever we're all in New York, we may not supply. You may not get to sit in the interview room next to like the Ryan Goslings of the world, but we can get you wine and we can get you hard seltzer and probably warm beer, so that we can do that for you.
Now you're talking. I know. You normally do it in New York, do you?
Yeah, I'm in New York right now.
He's in our office. We're kind of by Penn Station, our office. So if you ever want to stop by, we have so much more we could talk about.
Mm-hmm. It looks very attractive, that office. I've been enjoying the lighting.
Oh, you would not believe. It's actually a huge mess right now. It only gets worse the more you look. It's kind of a storage room right now, but our Wi-Fi is so bad, I had to find the only room I could get with Ethernet. So that's
Get you drinks. We can't promise you good internet.
You're no Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi, yeah. We use your data plan for sure. Yeah.
That sounds like a country and western song. Good drinks and bad Wi-Fi.
You got to trademark that. Get royalties for that.
Yeah.
They're going to put in a video game first. The Traitors on Peacock. Everyone who listens to the show knows. I mean, we love Riley. Absolute highest recommend podcast. I watched it in one day. Check it out. I'm coming. Wow. Thank you so much. Would love to talk to you
Thanks,
again.
Thanks, boys. Lovely to talk to you both. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.
This episode of Lights, Camera, Barstool is presented by 3Chi. Maybe take some 3Chi after you stay up and watch Andor. Introducing the next evolution in pure cannabis products, Delta 9-0. I appreciate 3Chi too. There's always something new in terms of the name. Delta 9-0 sounds somehow significantly more intense than everything else they've had. By 3Chi. 3Chi Delta 9-0 products deliver a similar yet smoother and stronger, longer-lasting euphoria compared to traditional marijuana products. High-quality, federally legal hemp-derived product raises the bar for what you should expect from a cannabis product in both effects and experience. Remember, this is not CBD. Get some 3Chi, but this is not CBD. This is not just some small little thing you're going to take. This is the real deal. You'll get high off this stuff. You'll feel great, relaxed. I'll get your exclusive 10% discount on all 3Chi premium THC products by going to 3Chi.com. That's the number 3Chi.com. Use promo code BARSTOOL10 for 10% off your order today. Must be 21 or older to purchase. Please use responsibly. Again, they got the oils, the tinctures. They got the food. They have Rice Krispies, brownies. The cookies are delicious. You could even take the powder, put it in some milk, and then dunk the 3Chi cookie in your 3Chi milk. Double 3Chi. Make sure to 3Chi now. They're 9-0 products. Smoother, stronger lasting euphoria. Barstool 10 for 10% off your order.
All right. We didn't talk about Spy Kids.
I was going to say, no floops, floopulas were brought up.
No, we did not. That's the one thing we didn't have time for.
Yeah.
What's the Spy Kids quote where it's like, who delivers it?
I can't even remember who delivered it now. That's going to bother me, where he's like, do you ever wonder if God – it's Steve Buscemi. And he's like, do you ever wonder if God knows we're suffering? What does he say? He's like, I wonder if God knows we're suffering and doesn't care.
Yeah.
Jesus.
George Clooney, Spy Kids alum.
Yeah.
Fucking who is – there's another bigger one. Elijah Wood, Spy Kids. Wait, we're seeing Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I forget.
No, he was in one of the Spy Kids, yeah.
Yeah.
So was Sylvester Stallone. Wasn't
yes.
Ricardo Montalban. Wasn't that his last movie? Was Spy Kids 3D Game Over?
My God, that stinks. Shout out Ricardo Montalban, though.
Do you think God stays in heaven because he too lives in fear of what he's created?
Jesus.
That's a very Spy Kids quote. That's a Richard Rodriguez special right there.
That's amazing.
Robert
Rodriguez, sorry. Richard Rodriguez.
We were talking about Richard Rodriguez.
Former Michigan football coach Rich Rod.
Yeah, there it is.
Rob Rodriguez is filming Lake Austin, that movie. Next up, this is an interesting one. Knock at the Cabin. Based on a book that came out not that long ago. Knock at the Cabin. I knew I would say that wrong. M. Night. M. Night's – I don't even know what to say about M. Night. M. Night is fascinating.
He's an enigma.
My folks' jokes about this movie was what? It was like, this is what they called United 93 or something like that. I forget what it was.
Yeah.
This is what they should have called in the 1993. Damn, I got to make some workshops some better with that.
He can make a good movie.
Hey guys, remember that joke I made 5 months ago?
about 9/11? And bet your ass you did.
He can make a good movie, a mediocre movie, a bad movie, and like one of the worst movies ever made. Like, he's capable of everything. Yeah. It's kind of impressive. This is his latest one. Keep in mind, he's also made a TV series as well.
Good series.
A deal with Apple TV. His previous movie was Old, which was just
so fucking terrible. Isn't that movie like 60-something on Rotten Tomatoes? What the fuck were they?
Should be lower than that.
Oh my god.
Glass, which was disappointing. Split, which was awesome.
Split was good.
The Visit, I'm not a fan of. I mean, you can go on and on.
I like The Visit.
I mean, he's made three of the worst movies I've ever seen in my life. The Happening, The Last Airbender, and After Earth. Mm-hmm. But he's made Unbreakable, and he's made The Sixth Sense. And Signs, whether you think it's a masterpiece or not, Signs is an impactful
like, – it was, yeah.
It is a
cult. That Alien alone.
Impact on culture.
Yeah. Massive hit.
This movie's pretty awesome. But there's a weird question I have with this movie as to whether or not this worked and why. This movie, by the way, the book is called The Cabin at the End of the World.
Mm. Which would have been a better title.
a pretty large difference between the movie and the book, which we will spoil in a second. Not yet. I like this quite a bit. This is my third favorite movie he's ever made. I think it has its issues. Nothing too crazy. And I don't think it's perfect. And I think a reason why it works may depend on how much you know about his movies and how many you've seen.
Yes.
And that's interesting to me.
Yes.
I don't want to say it yet, so let's save it for spoilers. So I gave it an 83 out of 100. It's behind Split and behind The Sixth Sense. I really liked it. I thought the performance was really good. And I kind of I'll eat some crow on Dave Bautista, who's been a good actor in things, but I thought he was very good in this.
He's excellent.
Just like he is very good at that soft-spoken, calm role. It's a great contrast, and he commands the screen with his size, but doesn't need to do that with his voice when he acts. That's very. It was awesome. So again, I don't love it. I don't love it, but I had a really good time with it, and I'm curious when I ask the question in a second after you guys state your reviews, and we do spoilers. Like, if you guys agree with me on that, so we'll see. I don't want to spoil anything yet. Ken, Jack.
Yeah. So. I think I pretty much came to the same conclusion as you, is where, like, I think this is a movie that will be really hurt by the expectations that come with an M. Night Shyamalan movie more than anything else. Like, because I think if you were to objectively take M. Night out of the equation entirely and you watch this movie, you would have a good time. Like, I feel like it would be impossible not to have a good time watching this movie if you just removed him. I ended up giving it an 85 out of 100. For me, it's like, just on Split's level. It's like, and I know you guys aren't agree with this, we'll explain a little more. Without getting into too many of the spoilers, just on the acting side alone, I think you have two really heavy hitters with Dave Bautista and Jonathan Groff. I think Bautista was definitely more impressive, but he also had a way more interesting role. And like that intense, like sort of dominating presence in that tiny claustrophobic cabin, which reminds me a lot of like what made him so great as, was it Sam Sapper or something in Blade Runner? Yeah. Like that, it was that same sort of dynamic where he's just fucking dominating you. And like, I think the only thing I wished was that he was a little bit different than the low voice, not in that way, although that would be cool too. But the only thing I wish I changed, like the quiet voice of him, like that he did was really cool. I almost wish he was a little more jocular, like every wrestling coach in history ever is. But other than that, like, I think I was more really surprised with Ben Aldridge, who played Andrew. I thought he was really good. And also Kristen Kui, who played Wen, the child actor. We always say it, child actors can absolutely derail a movie, but I think she made this one a lot better. And that's always going to get high marks from me. Most of the other stuff I want to talk about is more spoilery, but I think, again, you remove the reputation of M. Night and you have a really, really tight hour and 40 minute long thriller, which is golden spot right there. Hour and 40 minutes, golden. And I think you have good acting, a really cool concept, and really interesting camera work too. I saw someone tweet that too. They were talking about how he treats the camera like a character. And I think that's like spot on. I wish I saw a tweet of that. So that's where I'm at. The rest of the stuff is more spoilers. So I'm at an 85 out of 100.
Yep. I guess I'm we're a bit more all over the place than I expected. I do like this as well. For the record, I enjoyed this. I think it's, you know, one of his better films. Definitely, I mean, compared to Old, it's fucking masterpiece. Completely with you on Dave Bautista, and I know he's shot this down, but dude, Dave Bautista needs to play Bane. Like the way he's shot in this movie too. I give M. Night a lot of credit. They really expand on his presence with the sound editing, just like with him, the way he walks. Like, it reminded me of the Batman. Like,
dude,
like,
the creaks.
His footsteps are loud. And I really like that claustrophobic feel that, you know, he adds to the movie just with his presence. And the fact that there's a juxtaposition there between, you know, you have this massive guy, but he talks like very softly, very quietly. He's really become a very good actor. I was engaged in the story. I agree with you, Ken Jack. You know, I criticize movies all the time for how poorly paced they are. I'm never bored during this movie. We'll get into spoilers, but there was a way in which I thought this movie might be going. And if it had the balls to go there, I would recommend this a lot more. My biggest problem, and it sounds weird, but just hear me out, is the entire time I liked it. There was never a moment where I'm like, oh, this is getting bad or this is losing me. Maybe a little bit near the end. But for the most part, I was with it the whole way. But there's never a moment in which it rises above the level of good for me. Like, there's never a moment which I'm like, oh, that was a spectacular scene.
I'd agree.
Oh, I'm going to – this is going to be a movie. I said this in the review I put on Twitter. Like, it's going to be a movie that's going to come on TNT in a few years. And you'll watch it and you'll enjoy it. And then at the end, you'll be like, oh, wait, yeah, I saw that, didn't I? It's just not particularly memorable. It's why I wish the ending would have gone a little bit in a different direction. But as a whole, you know, I do recommend this. You know, whether you see it in theaters or wait till streaming, I think this is much better than a lot of movies that I see. I have it at a 70, but it's the superior film of the weekend. And I think for, you know, an early February release, I think a lot of people will enjoy this. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm about right. Y'all, actually exactly where Chris is at. I'm at a 70 also. I think this is the Dave Bautista I've been waiting on since he showed up in Blade Runner 2049 and was just, I think, fantastic in that. This movie is shot, I think, brilliantly. M. Night's always been good with a camera, but especially here, all those close-up shots on the face while you're inside that cabin, it just provides that sense of like dread, and like you see the emotions on all their faces and you're wondering, are they telling the truth? Are they crazy? And I think the movie is great there. I think it rises above good. I think it's great when the audience is wondering who to believe.
Yeah.
The ending is what really brings it down for me. I think there's a ending here that I would have preferred to see, and I think would have been much more interesting, like way more interesting. Didn't get that. But it's still a good movie.
See, but this is where I think my question comes into play too. Is like, do you think you would have both of you, you and Chris, would have that same opinion if this wasn't an M. Night movie? If you erased M. Night from this equation,
let's go into spoilers. No. I think that's my question too. I think Kendrick had the same question. It's okay. Do I like this? Spoilers. Do we like this because we know M. Night and he subverted our expectations of a twist? Because if you're listening still and you don't know what happens, there's no twist. They're the four horsemen of the apocalypse. That's what they're supposed to symbolize. Right? So I guess that's how I took it. I'm sure most people did. They say the apocalypse is happening. Planes are crashing, tsunamis and everything. And that's just what happens.
Yeah.
One of them is sacrificed. Uh-oh. Go off, live with a daughter. Great. Different from the book, by the way. Daughter dies in the book.
They kill the daughter?
What?
They kill the daughter?
She is accidentally shot and killed.
Oh.
That would have been
the ending. They don't care if it's real or not. So it ends ambiguously. Mm. Which, that's where – I like this. I didn't need the daughter to die. I would have been – I would have liked more if they would have gone to the diner at the end. Like, and I would have liked if we didn't know – if it had happened or not. I don't mind it being, and I think that's for me, it's like the story like didn't really grip me. But I'm curious, like Kendrick, you just said, like, and I'll let you answer, Kendrick. Like, did we like it more because we just know M. Night? Like I don't know. Like, it subverted my expectations. I'm glad he didn't do the twist. I'm glad he didn't do that.
Yeah.
Like, I'm glad he didn't turn it on its head and say, this is actually what happened. Like, I'm like, oh, okay, you know what? That changed my emotions a bit watching this.
Yeah, I think that like it's hard to explain, but like basically like this is where the expectations of it, right, versus the reality of it all really kind of like comes into a clash almost. Because, like, yeah, M. Night's known for twists. That's his thing. It's what everyone knows him for. When you watch his movies, basically that's what you're just waiting for. It's the countdown to the twist. And I think that that hurt him, but also helped him in this movie. Because it helped, because throughout the entire movie, I'm sure all of us had this experience too, I'm just on my toes. You know, I didn't believe anything that I was shown at all, and I was waiting for the other shoe to drop essentially for the last entire third act. And I think that added to the tension and that, like, cinematic experience more than anything else. But when that twist didn't come, which is not guaranteed by any stretch of the imagination, that's not something he's owed to you as a filmmaker. And I felt like something was missing. I'm like, I feel like I was robbed of a good twist. And then at the same time, I get out of the theater and I'm thinking about it and I'm like, I wasn't owed a twist. You know what I mean? And it made me feel more tension or more tension and all these things. And maybe if he didn't have that reputation, then it wouldn't have felt as tense as it did. So, like, it's kind of hard. You got to weigh the positives and the negatives with it.
Yeah.
But again, that's where it's just, I think the ultimate question coming away is, like, if this is directed by a Zach Cregger or, like, whatever other new horror person or suspense person in the game, would I be like, oh, this is an awesome movie? I'd still be like, yeah, this is a really good movie. I wouldn't, it's just like, I think because of his name and because of what he's associated with, as far as like how the plot works out, that's why we're kind of feeling more iffy about the ending and how things played out. Okay. At least that's my take on it.
Yeah, no, this is a really good discussion because I did not come into this expecting or anticipating a twist, you know, and I wasn't watching it being like, well, it's M. Night, here we go. Like it's coming. I thought maybe we'd get one, maybe we wouldn't. My issue with the ending is that the way it was going, I'm like, they're going to pull a Cabin at the Woods at the end of this and the world's going to end. And I'm like, that would be so much ballsier. And I'm sorry, it would make a lot more sense given the way I feel like Jonathan Groff's turn at the end, just the characters coming to that agreement of, okay, we need to do this to save our daughter and live on. It seemed a bit forced. You know, it seemed a bit quick to me. I feel like had they have gone the other direction, the ending would have been a lot more memorable and it would have stuck true to what the theme of the movie was, which is, you know, I mean, you know, it's, I feel like every movie is like this, but it is about family and like, you know, love for a person, how willing you are to like, you know, be there for somebody you care about. So I don't hate the ending. Like if there's M. Night has some fucking shit endings. It's not a bad ending. I just feel like the quality of the film would have been elevated had it have gone in the other direction.
I think, though, if it were to do that structure you're talking about, we'd all be like, oh, this is super derivative of Cabin in the Woods. And, like, this is a ripoff version of that, and it's not as good as it. Like, you know what I mean? Where, like, I understand what you're saying. Like, it would have been – like, that's what I was waiting for, too, because of the reputation of M. Night. I'm watching this whole movie. I'm like, I'm waiting for it to be like, oh, they fed this through a closed loop into the TV, all this footage and stuff. It's all fake. Everything's fake. And, like, it didn't happen. And I'm like, I'm kind of, at the end of the day, happy it didn't. Because number one, like you're just saying, it would have been derivative of stuff we've already seen. Number two, it's just like this feels more – it felt more in line with what everything the movie was trying to say, at least to me.
That's fair. No, and I think it'll be – it actually speaks to, in my opinion, the quality of the movie that it's opening things up to a greater discussion. So yeah, I mean I just – that was just how I felt about it. I would have liked to have seen it go another direction. But again, it's not a forced ending necessarily, if maybe a little bit rushed, and it's not even bad. I just wish it would have taken that extra step and a little bit ballsier.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I felt like there was just a lot of hand holding towards the end of the movie. Like,
yeah,
you brought up the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Like, why is a character even bringing that up? Let the audience get to that. Cause it's not a very complicated thing to get to on their own. Like, let the audience come up with that on their own. You don't need to be saying that out loud. I don't think you need to show what happens at the very end. I think it would have been way more interesting if, you know, one of the husbands, you know, dies or they kill one of the husbands and then they leave and you're left wondering, did it work? Like,
I think that's way more ambiguous. I think that
would have been the ending that I'll prefer. Yeah.
I think it would have been ambiguous. I think it was set up to be that way. And I'm not sure why he went so straightforward. And maybe it was an overcommitment on his part to like, just be different than what he usually does, where he's like, I'm going to do the exact fucking opposite. But I think even just being ambiguous was kind of that too. And I'm bummed he didn't do that because I'll tell you what, if it had been ambiguous, I would have felt significantly different about this movie. And I still liked it. Like if he had done that, like this would be, holy shit, what an early beginning of the year, like gem.
Because then I think it drives home the underlying concepts of like, I mean, he's talked about faith, his religion, he talks about that quite a bit in his movies. And then, you know, the idea of like
misinformation or, you know, crazy people online, which has become like a thing these past, it's always been there, but
we actually watched last year on church once. It was very cool.
Yeah. Did you really?
No.
I was about to say, that does not seem like a thing a church would allow. Sacrilege. Yeah, no, I think it would drive home those points a little stronger if you leave that ambiguous, because then it's, you know, you're thinking about it.
I think I would counter with saying that, like, at least with the Four Horsemen thing, I think a big part of this movie, like a giant element of it, was like Jonathan Groff's like character coming to terms with like accepting essentially the reality of what's happening. Yeah. And like, because it never happens with the character Ben Aldridge as Andrew, like it never happens for him,
right?
Really, it only ever happens for Groff. And like slowly over the course of the movie, he's coming to accept it. And I think him just like, I'm never a fan of stuff like people saying stuff out loud if they can avoid it. I do think him saying to convince Andrew, not to convince us as an audience, yeah. I liked it in that sense.
Can I also point out those news segments were fucking terrible?
They were not nearly traumatized enough for what was going on around. Oh, by the way, that was another thing I noticed when they leave, right, and they go to that diner. Bro, there is like a fucking killer virus going around the entire planet. They're all just chilling in the diner watching the news together 5 feet away from each other. Like, what the fuck, man?
Someone, I think it was Double Toasted, pointed this out, and I didn't realize it. M. Night uses news footage as a crutch in a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
Like, they are a lot, yeah. The Happening, Unbreakable, and they're rarely ever well done. I mean, I understand why they're there for exposition.
There you go.
But as a whole, that those parts didn't really work.
I would say I think the criticism that we have, and we like it on varying degrees. Like, we all liked it. It's Kendrick and I. You know, I think we liked it probably like a little more. Like, it just, we're all in that area. I think that's very fair. Like, I kind of wish like they would have left a little more mystery to it. The criticism I don't like, which I've seen, is people like, where was the fucking twist? Which is what you talk about, Ken Jack. It's like people where it's like, I felt owed the twist. It's like, no, he just didn't have a fucking twist in his movie. That's the difference. It's like, I'm okay with that.
He has movies that don't have twists either.
Right.
Like, I know this, you can't do this. If he didn't make The Sixth Sense, no one would be talking about this. He's famous because he was the director for one of the most famous twists. I know The Village has a big twist. I understand that.
Yeah.
But like, I don't he's made a lot of movies that didn't have some, like old didn't have some, I mean, unless you just count Stupidity.
It wasn't really a twist because you knew something was going on like the whole time in that way. You know what
the
I mean?
Happening didn't really have one.
Hmm. Yeah. Like
Plants Were Killers.
Man, that movie. The Plants Were the Killers.
The twist Jeremy was, Strong I walked says, in and didn't know it'd be the first movie I ever got kicked out of because my friends were drinking at the screen. It's a bad move. I apologize.
You know
I apologize.
You know what the most crushing twist was, or the worst twist he's ever had?
That Last Airbender sucked ass.
No, that Stuart Little wasn't real.
Wasn't real. He's a writer on Stuart Little.
Crushed me when that mouse wasn't real.
That's the one thing that I'm like. I've seen that criticism and I'm like, it's unfair. Like, come on. Like, you don't dislike it just because you didn't have a fucking twist. Like, how simpleton do you have to be that you can't just take a movie at face value? But anyway, I think in the end, compared to old, holy shit, that movie sucked.
That was real bad. Although, and I also liked his cameo, and this is one of my favorite, him selling the air fryer and the infomercial. That's, I think, my favorite M. Night in movie cameo
guy. I feel like a lot of directors do that, writers, like, they're not good at that. I always enjoy his cameos.
I liked Peter Jackson's in all the Lord of the Rings movies. He always had a good one. Like, Fat Pirate number one, Drunken Villager number two. Like, he always had Peter Jackson love those.
He's just Gimli. In the entire Return of the King, he's just Gimli.
Yeah. He's had no idea.
Yeah, people just don't. They recasted him, what's next week?
It's a good question.
Let's see. February is not a bad month, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't know what next Usually week not. Is. It is. Hold on. Let's see.
See, I put up the schedule a minute ago.
Magic Mike's Last Dance.
Oh, God.
I'm very ready for the graphic sex scene. Oh, which one's? That's a detective one, right? With Liam Neeson?
Yeah, that's February 15th.
Though. Ramps up in March. Once March hits, it's like full speed the rest of the year. So,
yeah.
What have we not done that people have like begged us to? We did The Whale,
Sharper, Your Place, Your Place of Mine, a Netflix movie. Yeah,
maybe
I love Triangle Sadness.
I liked it a lot too. It's just like, I don't know if we have Ant-Man soon. We're gonna have, what day were you watching that? Because I know we got invited to the screener of it.
We got invited. Next Winnie week.
The Pooh, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. That's when
I don't want to review. I'll review it, but I hate that shit.
Corn, holy shit, fucking cornball nonsense. Get the fuck out of here.
Emily.
Remember how I miss Rideshare. I miss when Ken Jack and the director of the movie Rideshare got into a fight.
He looked up my entire existence on a stream. And then he couldn't figure me out.
He made a whole YouTube video about you.
Yeah. Cocaine Bear soon too. That'll be a fun one, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should.
Yeah, it's got a lot of press.
Linoleum.
All right. Thanks to Alan Cumming. We'll figure out what we'll do. We'll hit some Oscar ones that we haven't talked about. People want to say Triangle of Sadness is one that I've actually a bunch of people are starting to see now, by the way. Yeah. I've been having a lot of people mention Triangle of Sadness to me, which I know Gooch, you're a huge fan. I love it too, but I know Gooch, you fucking love really Triangle of Sadness. Make sure to go see Downhill with Julie Dreyfus and Will Ferrell.
What is the remake of Triangle of Sadness we're going to get? Even though it's like all English. good Lord.
It's so bad. Oh my God. That's it. For Gooch, Ken Jack, Chris, I'm Jeff D. Lowe. See you later in the week.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
With golf season in full swing, Chevy wants to help you make the most of every drive, and the all-electric Blazer EV's bold design and dynamic performance make it the perfect electric vehicle to get you to the course in style and comfort. Chevrolet, together let's drive.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.